You are listening to the Willpower Podcast. Welcome to the show. I am Will Holdren, and I talk with some of the most influential CEOs, entrepreneurial leaders, and thought leaders to try and reveal the secrets that has led to their success. I believe that with the right knowledge and mindset, you can do anything you set your mind to. So if you want to learn how to change your life for the better, if you want to learn how millionaires actually became wealthy, or if you want to develop and start your own business from the ground up with the right knowledge to help you, then you are in the right place because this is the Willpower Podcast. No way that we go is a one-way street. Nothing that we love is a one-day key. And if we gon' do it, we gon' do this now. And if we say we gonna, we gon' hold this down. How's it going, everyone? My name is Will Holdren. I am the host of the Willpower Podcast. Today we have an amazing guest, and his name is Alan Draper. And Alan is actually a business growth expert. On top of that, he's invested close to $5 million in other people. He's also an angel investor, and he's going to be headed to 50 businesses before he is actually 50, which is an amazing accomplishment. Before he started in entrepreneurship, he actually had a law background. He was an attorney. And lastly, he is also the co-founder of a company called Proof Pest Control, one of the many companies that he runs and operates. So it's an absolute honor to have him on here today. So Alan, thank you so much for joining me.
Yeah, man, I'm excited to be here and excited to chop it up.
Yeah, I love that. I'm excited to have you on here. I've been following you on Instagram for quite some time. I love all your content out there. You're spreading a really good message. A lot of people need to hear it. And starting out, I want to ask you a question I ask all my guests, which is, what makes you want to take time out of your busy day to hop on podcasts like this and kind of share your story with other people out there?
Well, like, honestly, there's some like altruistic purposes and then some like personal, like, individual goals that I'm trying to hit. But, you know, I have my top level goal, professionally speaking, is to help 10,000 people make short-term sacrifices to build businesses and wealth. So that's my thing, is I want to make sure that people know that a lot of what's on social media, probably north of 90% of it, is completely fake. And I'm trying to give people a real sense of what it means to build a business, to be an entrepreneur, and to build wealth. And the reason why I want to kind of shine the light on the real side of it, what it's actually like, is not to discourage people. It's the opposite. I'm an optimist, man. I invest in a lot of companies. I take a lot of risk because I believe in a risk reward relationship. So it's not that. It's not me being pessimistic. It's me being real so that people can achieve real results. So that's my top level goal. That's why, you know, I thought it'd be awesome to chat with you, learn from you, share with you. And then also I'm trying to get, you know, I'm trying to get the word out about my personal brand, the things that I'm doing, and with the hopes of, you know, connecting with your network and that type of thing. So there's both this altruistic purpose and kind of a more individual objective that I'm after.
Got it. I love it. Well, that is such a great purpose. Like you're talking about, a lot of people see social media and that's just a highlight reel, right? It's so many people nowadays are just comparing themselves to people they see online that are millionaires by the time they're 18 years old, just starting e-commerce, right? It's so easy. But as you know, and as I've come to know, it's really not the case, right? This is something that it's going to take a lifetime to do. You got to build it. First of all, you need to develop yourself mentally, right? And just get in that right mindset and stuff. So it's a lot different than it's portrayed, for instance, on social media, just like you're talking about.
Yeah, I think a lot of times people look at what other people are quote unquote doing, and they feel insecurity, they feel a lack of confidence. Like, hey, I'm, you know, 25, 30 years old, and I don't have 3 houses or whatever. Bull crap, right?
Right.
There's a lot of problems I have with that. I don't like age by age comparison. That stuff drives me crazy, that you should be at a certain level by a certain age. We're all individuals and we're all on individual paths. So Instagram by itself is like, there's some good pieces in there, but I think it's the minority, because everyone's like taking pictures with their Lambos. And then you kind of dig in and you realize, oh, that dude rented that Lambo for the photo shoot, or he's acting like he's on a private jet. And I just can't stand that stuff, because the truth is that there are very viable ways to build your business and to build wealth, but it doesn't happen overnight. You're not going to become a millionaire overnight. Now, are there people that hit the lottery that start a business, or they got early into crypto? Absolutely. That's like becoming a professional athlete. You have a 0.005% chance of doing that. The real path to business success and to wealth is grinding it out and not giving up, going through hell and back. That's the real way to do it. The other way, like, I think there are people out there that they're like, yeah, my first year of business, I did $5 million in revenue. Dude, maybe there's a 0.01% chance of that happening. And right. And people see that on Instagram and they're like, oh, that, you know, I'm a failure, whatever. That's, it's just ridiculous, man. I'm bringing the truth to social media about what it means to build wealth.
Yeah. No, and you're spot on. And just for your time, that is the 0.00001%, right, that are doing stuff like that. And it's definitely not the normal for people. And that definitely needs to be talked about a lot more. So I kind of want to jump into your story here. So you have a pretty interesting background, right? You have a law background. You're a partner in a law firm as an attorney. And then you obviously made that switch out of that doing entrepreneurship stuff, right? So I want to kind of jump into your story for a second. So you're obviously super successful as an attorney. You could have definitely just stayed there if you wanted to and been doing your law stuff and been completely fine your whole entire life, right? But you decided to kind of venture away from that and go more into the entrepreneurial side of things. So my question one is why? And two, what made you want to make that jump into entrepreneurship?
You know, I think entrepreneurship is, I think it's a personality type. The real entrepreneurs, there's this wave of like the Instagram entrepreneurs that are like, I want a business because it's cool, sexy, and I make a lot of money. And the truth is, I don't know if any of those are true, especially in the beginning. You really got to build up to it.
Yeah.
But I think it's a personality type. And from the time that I was little, man, I was out like knocking on neighbors' doors, asking if I could rake leaves. I had a newspaper out every day of the week, starting when I was 10. So I was always a hustler. I went to law school. There was a point in my life where I was choosing between getting an MBA and going to law school with the idea that I'd eventually have my own law firm or do something with business. So I think through law school, it was so difficult and passing the bar was so difficult that I felt like, you know, dude, I better practice law for a few years to make this worth it. And I feel like I lost my way for a year or two where I'm like, okay, I'm going to make a career out of this. I'm going to work my way up in a law firm. And as I tried to go through that process, I realized, oh man, this is not me. This is not me. Like, and so I was practicing law downtown Phoenix. One day I came home from work. At the time I had a 2-year-old and a 4-month-old. And I told my wife, hey, you know, let's pack our bags. We're going to move to Detroit and I'm going to start a pest control company. So you can imagine the shock, right? I had a well-paying legal job, like stable. And she looks at me and she's like, you know what? Let's do it. And the rest is history, man.
Wow. That's awesome. And so that was the first time you started this pest control business, correct? So walk me through that transition. Cause obviously it's scary, right? You're walking away from the stable job. You got a family, you got kids and going to a whole new city, right? And a cold city. So walk me through, how did that first startup go with this pest control business the first time you tried to get it off the ground running?
Yeah, so I actually tried to start a pest control company before I went to law school.
Okay.
And that one failed.
Gotcha.
That one didn't even get off the ground. I don't even know if we got a pest control license. So so then I kind of, you know, worked my way to law school. Fast forward to we moved to Detroit. And we always had this marketing and sales emphasis. And so early, like I'm talking like first couple of weeks, you know, things were tight. We're kind of, you know, I've seen that our bank account balance start to go in the wrong direction.
Right.
But we sold really well and we worked really hard. So we actually had a really good first year. We didn't do $10 million in revenue. We did like, you know, we opened our doors like mid-March, did $600,000-$700,000 in the rest of that calendar year, which for a startup, just to set expectations, is fantastic. It's got to be in the top 1% of all startups to open your doors and in 9 months have, you know, $600,000 on the top line. So, right. You know, I had a team around me. I had my brother was my business partner. And that made a difference. So having that team so we could hold each other accountable and use the skill sets of everybody else. And yeah, and we've been doing it for about 10 years now. We're in 8 states. We have 10 locations. So we have a branch in Long Island, New York, Boston, Massachusetts, across kind of the Midwest. And then our furthest west branch is in Reno, Nevada. So, you know, it's going great. We've been able to do a lot of really cool things through, you know, a very unsexy business, which is pest control. Everybody on Instagram wants to talk about e-commerce and crypto and they see what I drive. Like, people will see me like pull up in a car, or like they'll see online some of the cars that I have, and they'll be like, dude, what do you do? And I'll be like, oh, I own a pest control company. And just mind's blown, right? And in full disclosure, that was the catalyst. The pest control company was a catalyst. We still own it, and it's still thriving, and it, you know, it's growing, it's doing great. But we've done other things since then, in all fairness.
Yeah. Do you still have an active role with that pest control business? Or are you more kind of just overseeing that now?
Yeah. So I do. And from week to week, it might vary, but we have a CEO that runs it. I would consider what I do kind of like a board position, a quasi board position, where I'm in maybe some difficult decisions. If we're talking about growing to a new market or a key personnel hire, or a strategy decision, but I'm definitely not involved in the day-to-day.
Yeah, that's awesome. And the reason why I asked that is because I feel there's a lot of entrepreneurs out there that have a business, they're trying to scale it, but the whole bottleneck is themselves, right? It's so hard for them to kind of find a way to exit that company, leverage that liquidity, the liquidity that they're going to get from that, and actually do other things like what you transitioned to, which is becoming an angel investor, finding other resources to go out there and invest in and make a good return on. But in those scenarios, like, how hard was it for you to exit the company, and kind of what would you suggest to people that kind of want to grow their business and be able to exit it right successfully and let someone else kind of have that main CEO role?
Yeah. So, and there's two ways. I mean, the traditional definition of exit is to like sell, right? To sell sell your company and move on. But then I think what you're also getting at is exit from the day-to-day duties, right? Like, continue to replace yourself. And so, you know, there's a couple of things. And one thing that entrepreneurs struggle with is letting go of control, because that's their baby. And I get that 100%, man. That's your blood, sweat, and tears. That's like, you didn't go on vacation for 3 years while you were getting off the ground, or you did something crazy, like moved to Detroit, Michigan, and, you know, pack your family into a small apartment. I get it. But, you know, one of my favorite authors is Dan Martell, very successful in the SaaS software industry. And he said 80% done by somebody else is better than 100% done by you.
Yeah.
And so the entrepreneur has to realize that. Like, is anybody going to do the job that you're going to do? Probably not, man. Probably no one's going to care that much. Now, I've surrounded myself with people that are actually better at their jobs than I am. There's no question that a lot of the roles in my company, marketing director, CEO, the accountants, the HR folks, the people that are selling, they're better than I am, hands down. Do they care as much as I do? I don't know. But if the entrepreneur really wants to scale, they have to let go of that control. And they have to realize that that quote, 80% done by somebody else is better than 100% done by you.
Right, right. And that's so important. And obviously over time, right, you got to trust that person enough to kind of handle those responsibilities and kind of take those over. So I think that's another, you know, important step in that screening process, whatever that looks like. And, you know, obviously have a position where they can kind of feel that ownership coming into that business when you're kind of passing it on to them.
You know, what's interesting about trust is, and I had somebody come up to me, and this individual owned a climbing gym, you know, with the rock walls and stuff. And she's like, you know, I'm looking for a manager, but I haven't hired anyone because I couldn't find anyone I could trust. And I explained like, Hey, I get it. I totally understand. But just so you know, the trust comes after the hire, not before. You have to go out on a limb. You hire somebody, and then it's months, you know, 6-8 months. Then it's like, okay, I, you know, take a couple of deep breaths. So that's a very important point that you raised, but that trust comes after the hire. It's rare for it to come before.
Gotcha. That makes a lot of sense, but you got to see them in action, see if they actually follow through on what they said they're going to do. And that's how the relationship grows and their trust also grows. So it's a very good point. And so now you've transitioned more into an angel investor, right? So you take a lot of coaching roles and you want to find other businesses to invest in. So on that note, what are the main businesses that you're looking for that you're investing in, or kind of what are those niches that you're kind of focusing your angel investing towards?
So I have a diverse portfolio. So it's not necessarily industry specific what I'm looking for. The key is the individual. So I'm not necessarily investing in specific industries. I'm investing in specific individuals. So the way that I've set up my businesses after the pest control company is that I'll partner with an operator. So I'll get involved with somebody where they have an active role in the business. They basically run it. Mm-hmm. I'll help fund it and get it off the ground. So that's a big subset of what I do. And then on the angel investing side, I'm looking for fast growth companies, high potential, really high risk. So I've been investing, I recently wrote a check for a fintech company, another software company. There's just kind of a wide array of what I'm looking for just to kind of balance things out.
Gotcha. No, that definitely makes sense. And obviously, you're kind of crushing it, and also you're helping a lot of people get there too, which is, the coolest part about it. Cause I think a lot of entrepreneurs, they struggle with the funding early on, and that's kind of one of the biggest, hiccups that people can kind of come across or want to start a business. So I want to dive into that a little bit, and you can kind of speak from the investor point of view. But if I'm a brand new entrepreneur, yep. I got a dream, I want to start up this business, but I just need that capital, right? So what are the main things that I should be doing? I should be trying to pitching to people to potentially invest in. So what should I be focusing on if I'm in that position?
So three things. One is, so when I write a check, I'm looking for three things. And the idea, that's probably number four. Hmm. So don't spend too much time on the idea. It is important, but more important, number one is the leader, the founder, or the founding team. That's number one. Like, hey, and there are a few facets to that. Like, one is, are these guys talented? But I think the bigger piece is, are they going to give up? Like, if I write a check, are they going to, is this a flame that's going to die out? Mm. The team's going to be number two. So besides the founders, like, what's the team? Who have they surrounded themselves with? And then number three is going to be, what sense can I get of how they manage cash? That's a big one. I recently came across a company that it's a software company. It's a SaaS that's just piecemealing stuff and selling it. And I was like, what happened? These guys had revenue. Like, they had a really good product. I'm actually trying to buy I'm trying to buy the company. And I realized that they had 20 domestic developers before they had revenue. So wow. They had just millions outgoing and of overhead before they had a finished product. And it's like, how could they be so dumb? So the founders and the folks managing the company, they mismanaged it. So those are the three things. What's the founding team? So sell that really well. Number two, what does the rest of the team look like? If there is anybody, sometimes there's not, sometimes it's just the founders. And then number three, what proof of cash management can I show? And then fourth, you kind of wrap it up. The frosting on the cake is, what's the idea and the market potential for it?
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah. Those are all really great points. And now just diving into one of those points a little bit deeper. So you just mentioned the biggest thing is the leader, right? The founder, you want to make sure who they are, yeah, and make sure they're not going to give up. So is that something that you feel like you just have a gut feeling when you meet them at that very first meeting, or kind of how do you come to that realization, is if you want to touch on that a little bit?
That's where the secret sauce is, right? And it's very complicated. It's a lot of times it's the flip of a coin, but you try to find experiences, you try to draw on past experiences and find out what else they've done, find out you know, what experiences have they had? Have they done, you know, have they done any type of military service? Have they done, you know, there's a lot of churches that have missions, like where they send people out to do volunteer work. Have they done those types of things? Like, how did they do in school? Like, so you look at the pain points. What about their family? Find out about their family and their relationships. Relationships are tough. And so if you can like work on stuff, especially as a partner, your relationships with people, they're a really good indication of what type of relationship you're going to have with your partner. But it's, dude, that's a great question. And I wish I had a better answer for you, but yeah. You mix kind of some experience with a little bit of conversation, and then you throw in the gut feeling that you kind of mentioned, and then you pray because it's so hard, but that's so important. If you find a founder that has grit, the real grit, not the crap on social media, like somebody cold plunges for a few minutes, which I know nothing against cold plunging. I cold plunge 3 times a week, but that's not the grittiest thing I do. Right. And I definitely don't do it for the gram. Right.
Right.
But if you can find somebody that has grit, man, that's the champion. Doesn't matter the idea. It doesn't matter if they're coming up with a pest control company or the next freaking Uber. Does not matter if it's somebody, because you add grit to consistency. And even if the business, so most businesses, a lot of people think, oh, I'm going to do this type of business, or my business is going to be ABC. And they get down the road and it's like, okay, my business is way different. Like the people that I thought were going to be my partners are different. Like my location, I'm going to a different geo, like my cash management, my marketing strategy, all that stuff's different. So you know, you go into it, and if it's somebody that has grit and you add a touch of consistency, it doesn't matter what the business is, because they'll figure it out. Business is going to be different anyway.
Right. Right. No, I think that's a perfect answer. Right. You gotta be looking outside of the business, right? Out, like in life stuff, like relationships, like you're talking about, you know, grades and stuff in school, whatever that looks like. And yeah, like mission trips. So I think that's all, you know, a really good point, because I gotta be a well-rounded person that can bring that grit to the table, like you're talking about.
You can just ask them, like, hey, tell me about a time that you really, really wanted to quit something, and get the details of it. Like, what was it? Like, oh, I wanted to drop out of high school. Dude, that's the best thing you've got, that you wanted to drop out of high school and you didn't. Now, people have come from different experiences, right? Different backgrounds, different family arrangements and stuff. So some people graduating high school might, okay, that's different, but you want to dig in there and you want to find out why it was difficult, what they were thinking, why they were able to go through it. So that's another thing, is just kind of digging, and you can ask them, and then you get a sense for what they feel is difficult, because there is no way to describe how difficult starting a business is. And then when you grow it, it becomes exponentially more and more difficult. It's like me trying to tell you what salt tastes like. There's only one way to know what salt tastes like, and that's to taste it. That's the entrepreneur's journey.
Right, right. And it's hard, right? And it's not meant to be easy. It's not meant for everyone. Entrepreneurship is definitely not meant for everyone. So it's a very important screening process, and people need to figure that before they jump into the business, right? And then you figure out 5 years into it, like, oh man, I should not have done this. So
The thing is that I think a lot of people know. I think, you know, there's a headhunter from a private equity company that's been calling me, and he wants me to be on this. He wants me to be an advisor for this private equity company and help them find other companies to acquire and things like that. And I told him, I'm like, man, I'm not really a guy that has a job. And that's not saying like that's in my soul, dude. That's in my soul. That's not something I really chose. So if you find somebody like that, that's like, you know what, it doesn't matter if this works or not, I'm going to keep going. Cause that, you know, in your scenario, someone's like, you know, that eventually cause there's no other option. You can't settle. And that's the type of person you're looking for. And I think people deep down know, they're like, look, I would rather fail and fail and fail and fail and fail than not try in the first place. But there are a big subset. It's a majority of people. Majority of people, at least in the United States, would rather have a secure job, go home, not think about work. And they're, dude, honestly, Will, I'm not hating on that at all. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with that. I employ hundreds of people. They're really good people. They have great lives. That's not the life I want to live, man.
Right.
And so, you know, kind of coming full circle, like, don't lie to yourself. Don't just look at Instagram and, you know, do an e-commerce thing, although people make good money doing that, and like think that, oh, this is why I'm doing this. If it's not your soul, go get a really good job. Go get a really good job in something that you're passionate about, that you enjoy doing with good people.
Yeah.
We'll find a really good company. But don't try to lie to yourself, because like that type of failure is different. When an entrepreneur's failure, they'll take failure and they'll build on it. And then they'll fail again and they'll build more on it until they freaking pop. And when they pop, it goes crazy, right? Somebody that's not cut out for it. And a lot of times you don't know until you try. But the people that aren't cut out for it, they'll try, they'll fail, and then I'll go back to a 9-to-5. Nothing wrong with that, right? But let's be honest. Not everyone's an entrepreneur, man. Another thing that bothers me about Instagram. Not everyone's an entrepreneur.
Right.
So.
Right. And they definitely push people in that direction. But no, you're spot on. I think the true entrepreneurs, they're okay with taking that risk without knowing all the details. I think the big difference is, and you look at some of the top entrepreneurs that ever come through the country, they went bankrupt like a couple of times before they ever hit big. But the point being is that they went bankrupt and tried it again instead of ducking out of it, right? They tried it again, because their back was against the wall. They couldn't see their life any other way. It had to be this way.
Yep.
That's the kind of focus and tenacity they kind of brought into it. So I want to jump back into your story here a little bit. So obviously you've kind of scaled out of the first, you know, pest control business into becoming more of an angel investor. Now you're kind of scaling more businesses you're just investing in. You're kind of growing more and more as an entrepreneur. I mean, what is your end game plan here? What are some of the big goals you kind of want to hit, you know, going forward, like the next couple of years for you?
Yeah, I think I'm going to continue picking up speed with angel investing. Eventually, I think I'll run an investment fund. I'll raise money and have a fund that invests in tech and home services. I think it would be cool someday to have an incubator that helps software companies get off the ground, help them find resources and money. But those are the big thing. And then kind of going back to where we started, I want to help people understand the sacrifices that they need to make. So those short-term sacrifices, make those short-term sacrifices to build businesses and wealth without sacrificing the things that matter most, your family, your religion, your relationships, stuff like that. There's a way to do it. Yeah. You just can't find it very easily on social media.
Right. I mean, that's such a great point, because I feel like a lot of entrepreneurs as well, they just talk about it's all work. It's all business 24/7. There's nothing else, but you're going to burn yourself out. Like if you stay in that time, you need to have a more well-rounded stuff where it's focusing around God, your faith, focus around your family as well, and your business, and making it all work together. And so 100%. Talk a little bit more while we got a couple minutes here, how has that kind of worked for you, and how hard was it for you to kind of be more well-rounded in life and not just focusing 100% on business 24/7?
Well, I like the term balanced life is, it's kind of deceiving, right? Because we don't live a balanced life, because that implies that everything's equal, right? But you don't, like, if you're on vacation, you're not working as much as you're spending time with your family, for example. I love the phrase, embrace the focused imbalance. That comes from a book called Procrastinate on Purpose by Rory Vaden. And the idea is that you spend times in your life where you're hyper-focused and you're present. So if you're working, you work. If you're starting a company, man, that's going to take your soul for 18 months, 2 years. Just know it. Just know it and accept it. Talk to the people around you and be like, hey, these are the big rocks we're going to put in the jar. I'm going to be home at this time every night for dinner, and we're going to have dinner together as a family for 45 minutes. And then I'm going back to the office. That's going to be the first 18 months. Okay. So you have to be really careful though, with this idea of embracing the focused imbalance, because there's some things that money can't buy, and that's time. especially if you have kids and relationships, you can't put them on the back burner for 18 months. But what you can do is make an arrangement where certain things are understood, certain things are non-negotiable, where it's like Sunday at church with the family, it doesn't matter if the business is crumbling, right? And so those things, it's like, you know, I'm getting really into golf. I tell you, I was not golfing when I started my first company, right? Yeah. Like that took a big hit. I did not travel. If I was doing anything not working, I was at home with my kids. So you kind of go into it knowing, look, this is what I'm going to do, but this is going to be 18 months. It's going to be a year, 18 months, 2 years, whatever. And then, you know, so I don't look at balance in terms of a year. I look at balance in terms of, I think it's like a 10-year or maybe a 20-year principle, right? You have your kids in the house for about 18 years. So I look at like, what about that 20 years? Like, okay, that, you know, when they were 3 to 4, I didn't have as much time for them as I did when they were 16 and 17. But then that made up for it because I took 6 months off and we went to France or whatever it is, right? So don't think of balance in terms of this week or today. That's ridiculous. That's stupid. Like, think of balance in terms of a bigger chunk. You know, one of my favorite quotes from Tony Robbins is people overestimate what they can do in 1 year and underestimate what they can do in 3 or 5. And it's the same thing with your time. Don't put that unnecessary burden on yourself. Trim all the fat out. The fat's going to be like, all right, man, I used to go hang out with my buddies on the weekend. I used to go to I have season tickets to, you know, the local college football team or NFL, whatever. Right. Okay. That stuff's gone because that will still be there in 18 months. That will still be there. I'm a huge Atlanta Braves fan. I say that I'm the biggest Atlanta Braves fan west of the Mississippi. Right.
Yeah.
But the Atlanta Braves, I had no idea who was playing, like what the record was when I started my first company. But when I came up for air, hey, what do you know? They're still there. That's not true of kids and relationships. So that's one thing to keep in mind.
Yeah. I think that's a really good point. I never really heard it said that way too, right? Just having a longer time frame for that balancing out stuff. Make your money now, get the business going now, right? And then you can breathe 5 years from now, a couple of years from now, and then see other stuff that's kind of going on, just like you're talking about. So very well said. So I know we're running out of time here, but before we hop off, is there anything else that you would like to say? And if people want to reach out to you, how can they find you?
Yeah. So my website, alandraper.com, I schedule 15 minutes to chat with people about whatever they want. Like if they want to run a business idea by me, or, you know, they are hiring an employee, anything business or wealth related, you can go to my website. There's a scheduling app there. And schedule that with me. And I'm very active on Instagram. I'm at Real Alan Draper. So that's where to connect me. But I just want to reiterate this message of, it's hard, but do it anyway. Don't compare yourself to others unless you're using it for fuel. That's the thing, is that I say, it's really cool to see what others are doing if you're using it as a way to change your perspective. It's like, dude, that guy, you know, I got a text yesterday and it was one of my college roommates. And he's like, bro, I'll miss you. He's like, I might get a little emotional about this, and he's had a tough life, dude. He spent some time behind bars and made maybe not the best decisions. And he's like, dude, I remember it. He's like, did you know it was 20 years ago that we were roommates? And it's crazy to think that, but 20 years ago we were roommates. I saw you driving this freaking old broken down car. He's saying this to me, right? I saw you driving this old broken down car. You were, you know, you were dating different girls. Like your life wasn't exactly what you wanted it to be. And he's like, and look at you now. That's what he said to me. And he's like, what that does for me is it realizes what I can do with my life in the next 20 years. So if you look at somebody else and you're like, dude, I'm a loser. That's not, you know, I should be better. Or I should be somewhere further in my life, or I should do this or that, or I'm not good enough. Cut that crap out. Look at other people and what they've accomplished to realize what you can do. Use it as fuel for your fire, but keep in mind, that 90% of it is fake. 90% of those guys, they rented those cars. They're in. Have you seen those studios in LA where it's like a fake private jet? People are like making videos, and it's in one of those like shipping containers.
Yeah,
and it's like,
it's sad.
You know, so keep that in mind, especially the younger generation, the folks that are between 20 and 30. You have so much time. You have 50 years to make an impact. Just go after it.
Yeah. I love it. And you know, you're spot on. And one last thing that I want to say is that the people that are crushing it, majority of them are not on Instagram, right? Majority of them are people that are walking around and they could have 100 million net worth to their name and you have no idea.
Exactly.
That's where the people are. So that's a very, very important point. But all right, guys, there you have it. Alan Draper, thank you so much for joining me today. No way that we go is a one-way street. Nothing that we love is a one-day key. And if we gon' do it, we gon' do this now. And if we say we gon'